Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Anyway, Jonathan DeBrecke-Butler joins us once again to talk about stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon. Yeah. Right, first off, we're going to Israel. And this is a story about a woman who's suing an airline for moving her, not moving her to tears, I assume.
She might have been tearful at some stage, but they moved her on a flight. She was on a flight returning from the United States of America in 2015. Now, this woman, probably in her 70s, thereabouts, Reni Rabinowitz is her name. And she was on this flight anyway, and a guy came on board, sat down beside her. He's one of these ultra-Orthodox Jews, or Hasidic Jew, or whatever you want to call it, who would be ultra-conservative, as the name would suggest. And the man started talking to the air host or air hostess or whatever you want to call them, and they then came back to the lady and said, any chance that you'd move? And she kind of got into a discussion with this guy who had sat beside her, and, you know, as to why, you know, he wanted her to move. And basically he said that the Torah, the Jewish holy book, says that you can't be touching women. She said, well, that's actually not true, but it's just your belief. Anyway, in the end, she moved, okay? She flew back to Israel, and then she was talking to a friend of hers who said there was this ongoing campaign to get this kind of thing stopped, and would she take a case? So she kind of got retrospectively angry about the fact that she'd been moved and decided that she would take the airline El Al to court, and she's after winning. She's won damages. I like this, that she only won $2,000 in damages, or just short of that. This was the sort of the details of the case were, of what she was going to get, were agreed upon outside of court. I'm glad she wasn't in it for the money as such. It was the principle of the whole thing. And basically the judge who gave the ruling basically said that El Al were no longer allowed to ask female passengers to move because of the, you know, religious whims, or whatever you want to call them, of male passengers.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Because anyone who's been on an El flight, like, everything's kosher. It's the most religious airline you could fly on. There's prayers every 5 minutes. One wonders if, did El Al say anything about this? Were they disappointed by the ruling? Perhaps were they secretly relieved by the ruling?
I'd say they might well have been. I mean, they took it on the chin, right? And then there's basically a quote from the piece which it says the sides reached an agreement that the airline's procedures on the matter would be clarified to its employees. So I think they're happy enough to go along with it. There's no indication that they were disappointed with the ruling. And yeah, as you said, it might be a bit of a relief for them.
But you'd wonder, though, if this happens in the future and there's a Hasidic man on one of their flights, might they take a court case if they were forced to sit beside a woman?
Yeah.
Who, God knows what appalling effect that might have upon them, poor fellas. Right, Kazakhstan, we're going to next. And Russian space launch there went wrong.
It did, quite badly. The launch itself was actually deemed a success by Roscosmos, as they're called. They have this space... I suppose the space station in Baikonur, right? It's in the middle of Kazakhstan, okay? So they launch all sorts of things from this. And this happened earlier this month, I believe. They were launching a supply mission to the International Space Station. And then the launch itself went fine. But debris from the launch or the rocket or whatever you want to call it obviously falls off and it lands in Kazakhstan, okay? And they hire teams of Kazakhs to go around the country basically putting out fires and things like that or repairing damage. And this, a piece of debris landed 600 kilometres away from the launch site and a team was sent to put out a fire. And unfortunately, there was a terrible accident and one of the team was caught up in the fire somehow and died as a result. So people in Kazakhstan, the public, weren't particularly happy about that, and they vented their anger on Twitter, amongst other places. There was one tweet which basically said, Russia's launching its rockets and our people are running around in their own land and putting out fires. It is ridiculous. So it's interesting because it struck me, you know, how open is Kazakhstan when it comes to journalism and all that kind of thing? And it turns out it's not very open at all. So for people to, you know, vent their frustration in such a public manner about this kind of thing is not particularly normal.
Yes,
if you know what
okay.
I mean.
It's quite unusual yeah. that would be allowed even.
Indeed,
yes.
You know, and it doesn't do the politicians there or the people who are trying to smooth things over with Russia and any diplomacy with the Russians any favours at all. I mean, currently there's talks between Russia and Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, I believe, about sending troops down to Syria. So, you know, this kind of thing isn't going to help, but it's a fairly authoritarian state.
Yes. But it's still quite extraordinary, though, if yeah. bits of rockets can just fall off anywhere.
Indeed.
And be on fire when they land.
Yeah,
and it's only a matter of time. I know Kazakhstan's a big and not very thickly populated country, but yeah. at the same time, sooner or later, someone's going to get killed.
Indeed.
Or serious numbers of people are going to get
killed. Yeah, and it's not the first time an accident like this happened. I believe there was some sort of toxic waste was... In 2013, there was an accident with that. So, you know, they were kind of fully expecting something to happen. So, anyway, not good.
Right, South Korea we're going to now. And a friend of the former president is going to see some jail time. And probably the president will eventually too.
Yeah. God, it's an extraordinary story, really, when you consider how quickly she's fallen from grace. But her friend Choi Soon-sil, who's known her, we believe, since about 1977. It's a fascinating story, actually. To cut a long story short, their parents were friends, okay?
Mm.
And these two became friends as a consequence. Now, there's a lot more to it than just that, but anyway, she has used her friendship with the former President Park, this woman Choi Soon-sil, to, you know, yield some power within the country, which people have always been quite suspicious of. And finally, the authorities have caught up with her, and she's been sentenced to 3 years. Now, this is probably the start of something, because there's actually several cases against her. In this particular instance, she was found guilty of obstruction of duty because she was using her presidential ties to get her daughter, who's also in trouble, by the way, into a university, a famous university in Seoul, and also sort of influenced the people there to give her good grades. So that's the first. But she's involved in all sorts of other things involving, you know, payments to Samsung and all sorts of things. So this is just the start of something.
Yeah, and this particular person wasn't hanging around in South Korea waiting to find out. They had to be extradited.
Well, the daughter actually had... She was in Korea, this woman,
okay.
But the daughter actually had to be extradited from Denmark. The daughter's quite high profile. I believe she's an Olympian in eventing or some sort of equestrian sport, something like that. So they're a big deal, this family. And if you can imagine, you know, the president of the country, you know, only back in March, is now on trial, and also her best friend. And
yeah.
It's quite an extraordinary story.
Is there a long list of people who are going to be put on trial who had some sort of dealings at Park?
Yes, absolutely. There's also, what's his name, Lee Jae-yong, I think it is, the president of Samsung. He was indicted in February. And he says that payments that were given to him were actually that he was blackmailed by these two, by Park and Choi Soon-sil. They're saying that they were political donations. So there's investigations going on there as well. But it all seems to be falling apart there for some people anyway.
Right. When's Park going to get sentenced? Or
I don't
when's
know.
There going to be a verdict?
She's on trial at the moment. I was looking at a news item on it, and actually the two of them were in the dock together. I don't think it was connected to these particular charges. But procedures are underway. So it seems to happen really quite quickly. So
yeah. At the same time, it's quite extraordinary. The web of all these connections and everything, everything that's happened. Okay, we're going to go to the UK, or it's a story involving the UK and Mauritius.
Yes, so the UK own a group of islands near Mauritius called the Chagos, I think they're called islands. So they refer to them as the British Indian Ocean Territory. And I suppose Mauritius became independent in 1968, okay? And in 1965, the British decided to keep these islands for themselves, okay? So they should have really been part of the Mauritian package, let's say, okay? But the British decided to keep this for themselves, and later on they rented these islands to the United States, who have an air base there, okay?
Mm.
So the Mauritians have always claimed that these islands were... you know, taken away from them illegally. All right, they say that there was a resolution that was passed in the 1960s which specifically banned the breakup of colonies before independence. So they cite that. And they've now brought a case to the United Nations where they're looking for a motion to for the International Court of Justice in The Hague to investigate this dispute. Okay, so the resolution was brought to the UN and the UK lost, but not only did they lose, but they lost resoundingly by 94 to 15, and most of the EU countries, including Ireland, abstained and didn't support them.
Well, they're not going to get much support now.
Probably not. Yeah. And but it was quite extraordinary because it's a huge defeat, 94 to 15. So you know, the British are saying, well, look, we're not going to take part in this process with the ICJ, even if it does go ahead, because the head of the UN has to give the nod first, and then the ICJ can invite both parties to, you know, put in documents or whatever evidence they have. Mm. But the British are saying we're not going to get involved, and we don't have to. So it's kind of in limbo at the moment.
So they'll just ignore it.
They will.
Essentially. Yeah. But these islands are leased out by the United States anyway.
Yeah, to the United States. But the Mauritians have said, look, if we get them back, we'll let you have the lease. We just want the cash, effectively.
Fair enough.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
So that's the, what the dispute is over.
Right, okay. But I suppose, given everything that's going on in the UK at the moment, they're not even, you know, it's probably barely making the news in the UK. Right, Australia we're going to now, and protesters clashing with each other.
Yes, so there's been an increase, as there has been in many parts of the world, in people and groups and political parties with right-wing sympathies, shall we say. Mm. And very interesting name, group. I think they're Australia-wide, but certainly they're in Melbourne, called the True Blue Crew. And these guys are opposed to refugees and what they call the Islamization of Australia, which I wasn't really aware was happening, to be honest with you, but, you know, there you go. They were out at a rally, and there was, of course, people there in opposition to him, a sort of a left-wing coalition who were looking for tolerance. And one or other of the parties broke a police cordon that had been put together to keep them apart, obviously, and the police decided to take out their pepper spray and use it on people. Mm. So as a result, I think quite a few people have been injured. But I think it's a small story in a bigger story, if you know what I mean. There's kind of the new government there, the Liberal National Coalition, are trying to tighten up rules around citizenship. So now if you want to become a citizen of Australia, you have to demonstrate how you've embraced Australian values. And they're also talking about bringing in an IELTS test. Now, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's an English language exam that you have to have to get into university, say. So let's say you're from Saudi Arabia and you want to come to Ireland to study. You have to score a 6, let's say, if you want to get into the University of Limerick. That's pretty high in IELTS. They want you to get a 5 here on this test just to become a citizen. That's difficult.
Right.
Actually quite difficult. So it's indicative of how what we might call extreme ideas are gradually filtering their way or finding their way into the mainstream politics.
But presumably the ruling parties feel that they're going to be leaking votes towards more extreme parties.
If they don't do something.
Is there a kind of a version of the National Front there?
Yeah, so there's a new party there, or they might be around for a few years. Pauline Hanson, I think they're called One Nation.
Yes.
And I think they're beginning to become quite popular in the country, or to a degree. A level where they're beginning to worry people anyway. Mm. It might be in reaction to that.
Is there a large Muslim population in Australia anyway?
I don't know.
Because I suppose given its location in the world, there's probably a lot of Muslim countries around it. Mm. But then again, I suppose when in these dialogues, when you hear Muslim, really what you mean is kind of slightly a dark-skinned person who may or may not be a Muslim.
Could so be. I think anecdotally, isn't there a big Lebanese contingent in Australia?
Oh, I don't know.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
Let Twitter answer that. I don't know. I haven't been to Australia, but I imagine there's a decent amount.
Yeah. Now, interesting story this, between Peru and Ecuador, somebody wants to build a wall.
Yeah, well, they've done it already. Ecuador is building a wall along the frontier with Peru, and needless to say, it's caused a bit of an argument. These guys, Peru and Ecuador, they don't get on very well with each other. They've had several conflicts. They had a fairly major war in the early 1940s, and more recently there was a couple of days where they had a spat over territory in 1995. So this is ongoing. And a town of Jaquilas, which is on the border with Peru, the authorities there have decided to build a wall which is 2.2 kilometers long, and it goes from being 1.5 to 4 meters in height at various different stages. Now, what it does is it splits two towns from each other that have effectively grown into each other. Okay, border town, you know, classic scenario.
Yeah.
Now, the Ecuadorians are saying that basically this is part of a park, a renovation in a park that they've done, and it's just part of building a wall there. The Peruvians are saying absolutely no way. This is, you know, clearly trying to stop people from going, you know, in and out of the country. So they're not happy about it. And they say that it actually breaks the terms of the peace accord that was signed in 1998. So as I mentioned, there was a couple of days where they had what was effectively a war. Dozens of people died in 1995, and the peace treaty wasn't signed until 1998. And part of that treaty doesn't allow for either side to build a wall within 10 metres of the frontier. And the Peruvians are saying that this wall breaks that particular part of the deal.
Yeah. Also in that, in the way that a lot of countries are just arbitrary lines and you have ethnic groups within that, the people who live around that border on both sides, are they essentially the same ethnic group and they're being split off from each other?
That's a great question. I don't know. I have to say I don't know. But what I can say that they do have in common is that there is a big fishing industry there. And whatever about the politicians, the people involved in the fishing industry aren't happy about it because it means that people are going to have to go, you know, a long way out of their way around the wall to get the trade done. And they reckon, or at least part of the unions on both sides reckon, that about 5,000 people will be affected. But the question about ethnic, I'm going to look into that and see if I can find out, but I don't know for now.
Right, Tanzania, we're going to go to finally. Story to do with teenage mothers.
Yes, this is John Magufuli, the president of Tanzania, who I think we were speaking about last week, actually. This is the guy who's known as the bulldozer because he came in and effectively got rid of a lot of needless expense within government and was seen as, at the beginning at least, as being quite a positive individual. But now he's shutting down newspapers and he's becoming, you know, I suppose more despotic in nature, I suppose, in for want of a better way of putting it. But he was at an opening of some building recently, and he was asked a question about young girls and teenage mothers going back to school. And he said that absolutely not. He said basically that this is a foreign concept, and to quote him, championed by NGOs and other people who do not wish the country well. He then went on to say that these NGOs are making noise, let them build school for teen mothers. And he basically rationalised this by saying that if we allow young mothers back into public schools, we will one day have pupils rushing back home to breastfeed their babies. This way we will destroy the nation. And he said that it was incentivised premarital sex and all sorts of different things. And it's really rather bizarre for a guy who up until now has seemed, up until recently has seemed quite rational in his actions.
There you go. You can't be having them teenagers getting educated. Right. What events should we look out for in the coming week, Jonathan?
Yeah, so Senegal has National Assembly elections on the 2nd of July. On the 1st, Estonia is going to take over the EU Council from Malta. And then there is mayoral elections taking place in Lakeland, Florida, which I'm sure people are well aware of. And three candidates have decided that they're going to meet or have a debate on a late night heavy metal show they're called Psycho Realms, which is actually hosted by one of the candidates. So that's an interesting way of debating things there.
Right. Someone's just sent me a link here. In Australia, the percentage of the population who are Muslim, 2.6%. So the Islamification of Australia
has overrun.
Some way to go yet. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.